Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinati Guma. And joining me to wrap this week up are Roy Mutooni from Absa Asset Management and Willem Oldewager from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Thank you to the both of you for joining us. Roy, starting with you and with that US inflation print that came out on Wednesday. I'd like your thoughts on it because some analysts are saying that, you know what, we've been at peak levels for a while. This is just a new peak. So it's not really surprising. Your thoughts?
So I think I agree with you that we've seen peaks and this is a record. I don't know since what year. But I think the disturbing thing about this print was how broad it was in terms of components. And also, when you look at which components were still rising, it's the stickier ones. So US CPI, about 30% of it is basically accommodation, so rental and home ownership, and that's continuing to increase, and it's sticky. Rents don't come down very quickly, and that is the real concern. And why it's a concern is that if the Fed continues to hike rates to address this, then there's real pain coming for housing. And I think that's what the market is grappling with. Does the Fed really want to impose this level of pain on households? And for how long? I think that to me was the most significant thing about this bill.
So, Willem, then, would that signal a kind of inflation being entrenched for longer?
Yes, I think what's happening, there's a knock-on effect. As Roy pointed out, inflation used to be food and transport, which the Fed combats with higher interest rates. But because they hike interest rates, people's home loan payments go up, which is quite a difficult cycle. So the Fed ultimately, I think it's now safe to say, reacted too late and made a policy error. And to fix that is very difficult because the instrument they have to fix it, which is interest rates, is going to start causing inflation, and this becomes stagflation. So there'll be lots of inflation with high interest rates, high interest rates, and then, of course, low economic growth, which is incredibly tough on the consumer. So you enter a recession, or if it lasts long enough, a depression. So you are a very negative print out of the U.S. On Wednesday.
All right. You know, as much as, yes, inflation is, you know, quite rampant right now, very sticky at its peaks, but there's consensus that it will go down next year. So some analysts are saying that it will settle below 3%, while some are actually saying that it will settle above 3%, where we get to a point where it kind of settles at a higher base than what we are used to. What's your view on that, Roy, what's your base scenario?
So I think the way to think about this is that what the Fed is trying to control is inflation expectations. So what they want is to avoid a situation where people observe high inflation and expect it to continue rise, in which case they'll go and ask for higher wages, and then it spirals beyond control, and the problem with that is everyone becomes short-term rather than long-term. So it is true, in all likelihood, with an aggressive Fed, you will have inflation coming back, coming down. But it's very difficult to tell to what extent. And that's the breakdown that we have right here. We look at where the long-term yields are saying. The long-term yields are saying you'll actually start cutting rates late next year, whereas the short-term rates are saying you're going up and you may actually bring in a recession. So I think all the Fed wants to do is to say, we want to take control of the narrative again. We want to get back our credibility, and we want to manage expectations. And the only way you do that is by continuing to hike until it's clear you are controlling.
Yeah. Roy, you talk about yields. Willem, are you worried at all about this prolonged inversion of the yield curve that we are seeing between the 2 and the 10-year U.S. Treasuries?
No, I think it gives you a good indication of the economic health of the U.S. But ultimately, medium to long term, they will invert the other way and be back to a normal sort of straight up yield curve.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the big movements on the JSE today. Of course, the big news is the potential buyout of Telkom by MTN. So Telkom share price really on a rocket to space. Roy, looking at this, I mean, what would be the implications for each company?
Okay, so if I start with Telkom, Telkom's made it very clear over the past 1 year that they believe their asset is incredibly undervalued. Their combination of assets that the market doesn't actually recognize, and I tend to agree with them. I mean, they're trading on an EV/EBITDA multiple of like 2.7, whereas comparable companies will trade at least double. And if you break it up into some of the parts, I mean, OpenServe should, if you compare the valuation of OpenServe with what CIVH and Vodacom got, which is about 13 times, then it tells you that they do have a point there. So they've tried different ways of realizing that value, and initially they wanted to list the tower assets, didn't work because of market volatility, and they couldn't work out a deal. So it's clear they're looking for a way of fixing this undervaluation. From the MTN side, MTN doesn't have much in terms of fiber assets. They've probably got the best mobile network in South Africa, but they don't have any fiber assets, and Vodacom have stolen a march on that. Now, the thing about fiber is it requires a lot of capital, and really in this country, it's basically MTN and Vodacom that have that money. So we've always expected that a deal between Telkom and MTN around OpenServe, similar to what Vodacom and Remgro are doing, would be in the offing. But now it seems like they want to buy the whole thing, which brings a lot of the other assets into play, and also seems to suit what Telkom were trying to do in one fell swoop. So I think it's a logical one. It's not a simple deal. I think there's a lot of complications, a lot of water to flow under the bridge. But the market seems to like.
Yeah. There has been a worry recently on the slide that we've seen in the Telkom shares. Of course, the financial metrics from their latest results also having something to do with that. Willem, at this point, should you be kicking yourself if you'd sold your shares in Telkom when it was on the kind of downward skid?
No, I don't think so. I think the results weren't very good. And this offer, even though the share price today is up, I think it's about 30%, is incredibly speculative. Okay. Roy alluded to it, but there are three or four things that really are going to be a hampering here. Firstly, the government owns 40% of Telkom, which means they would have to agree to sell to MTN or pretty much convert their Telkom stake to a smaller MTN stake. Then there's the mobile business competition, because we only really have four big providers, South Sea, Vodacom, MTN, and Telkom. So I think the Competition Commission wouldn't be happy about this. And then lastly, the spectrum auction just took place. And MTN will be taking a big chunk of spectrum from Telkom as well in the deal. So I think the chances of this deal going through, as it was sort of hinted to in the caution this morning, are very slim. I think what Roy said in terms of OpenServe being bought out, which would be a completely different transaction, maybe a special dividend from Telkom or something like that. So if I didn't sell my Telkom by now, I would sell it today, because I think it's pure speculation, the share price movement today.
All right. Quite interesting that all of this is happening in a time when Telkom is also making board changes. I mean, we have, for example, Mteto Nyati, who is the former CEO of MTN SA and Altron, coming in as an independent non-executive director. The deal isn't final yet. So, Roy, I mean, are you saying that without MTN, because you are saying that Telkom has considered itself as undervalued, so are you saying that without Telkom, then without MTN, then Telkom would not have much upside to it, even with everything that we are seeing, board changes and also just how they're going about trying to list Swiftnet and all these other businesses separately?
So if we look at it from an asset, so Telkom is asset rich. And the thing about it is the growth story in Telkom has been from the mobile asset. It seems to me that the mobile assets have reached their natural level in a four-player market. They have an EBITDA margin of about 27-28%. Their cash flow break even. They're not going to grow aggressively.
Okay.
The fiber asset needs a lot of money. The Gyro asset to grow it needs a lot of capital investment. And Telkom doesn't have that capital, let's be honest. The balance sheet looks okay now, but it's going to be stretched. They don't actually have the ability to invest as aggressively as they should. Mm-hmm. So I think from an earnings perspective, we weren't expecting significant earnings growth from Telkom over the short to medium term. Uh-huh. But like I said, from a valuation perspective, you can have an argument and a breakup that the sum of the parts is not the same as what it's trading now.
I see the news has also lifted the shares of Vodacom today. Willem, should Vodacom then be shaking in its boots with the possibility of this deal?
Yes, so I think the biggest threat to Vodacom would be to their fiber network from Dark Fiber Africa they acquired. But no, I don't think so. I think Vodacom and MTN are both deeply entrenched in South Africa, sort of in the mobile space, and I think they'll compete equally, sort of competitively going forward.
Where does that leave Cell C, Roy?
So Cell C, Blue just finished their recapitalization. They've got a very interesting business model. Basically what they did was they got rid of their network, they got their spectrum together, and what they want to be is this platform company that allows MVNOs to roam on their platform using their spectrum and allow other people to roam on their spectrum. So it's a capital light, but reasonable return business. Now, that's what they're marketing. Let's see how well that works, but there's clearly a niche for that. Because if you have a network, it's capital intensive. You have to keep on buying towers. You have to keep on investing. If you don't, and all you have is spectrum, you probably have a quicker way to profitability and higher returns. It's yet to be proven, but to me it sounds plausible.
Willem, there's a question here on Omnia. Kindly ask the panel about the merits of a long-term investment in Omnia. There's actually been quite a lot of interest on Omnia. Of course, people are seeing the success of that turnaround strategy, and they even gotten to a point of having deep pockets. For the year ended March, they posted a cash position of almost 2.5 billion. How are you looking at that business right now for a long-term investment?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting long-term investment. The management team's really good, and like you say, they chose a strategy, implemented it, and it paid off. So that's always a very good sign in terms of the governance of a company. And then in terms of their business, I think it's mainly accusations like chemicals and fertilizers and explosives, and I think it's an interesting space. To be honest, I think in South Africa it might be limited to sort of a high-quality, mature company with little growth, but I think they are, with their cash balance, they can spend capex both organically and acquisitively, which would probably pay off in the in the long term. So yes, in the long term, I think it's quite interesting. I don't think it's very cheap now, but as an investment, it's definitely a good proposition.
Yeah, and they're definitely talking about big things. So they've got this ambitious expansion plan to expand its mining solutions internationally, and they're also eyeing growth in their agri-bio business. Surely, Roy, there's still a strong pipeline for dividends here?
Yeah, exactly like Willem said. So the thing about stocks like Omnia, good quality stock, but if you look at it, return are probably around cost of capital. So it's cyclical. They've managed it well through the turnaround. In all likelihood, because of the commodity cycle and where the fertilizer cycle is going, we're going into a period where top line will come through. And if top line comes through, then in all likelihood, dividends will come through. But yeah, the caution here is that it's a cyclical stock. It's a low return business. Probably fair to pull at current time.
Another company that is exposed to the commodity price movements is Nampak. Double-edged sword, they're benefiting from the high aluminium prices, but then also you have these high input costs. But they seem to really be doing well. And they also were able to get an extension on their debt repayment of about 1 billion rand. Willem, how are you looking at Nampak at this point?
I like it. I think it's very cheap at the current sort of trading level, both just because of a low P and a high dividend yield. But I think the problem is it's just a highly geared play, almost equity beta in South Africa. So that gearing you were referring to, the loan that they got an outstanding sort of payment on, it's just the sort of risk you as an investor want to take that sort of informs your decision. So it's a great company. It's cheap. But the prospective returns are that high because they compensate you for the risk of a equity capital raise to cover that cost of debt. So yes, I like it. And I think if you sort of want a sort of risky high return play, it's definitely the right place to put your capital.
Roy, do you think they will have to actually go ahead with the rights issue at this point?
See, the problem with companies like Nampak, which have zero pricing power, zero ability to negotiate with their clients. They deal with a few concentrated clients, but again, they're very highly cyclical. And if you combine that high cyclicality with an over-leveraged balance sheet, yeah, it's risky. it's really risky, and if the cycle goes against you, you're going to bleed. And that's exactly what we've seen with Nampak. So these are companies which, through the cycle, I tend to avoid. Like Willem says, there's a time when there's a price for everything, and there's a time when these stocks look incredibly cheap. If you have the risk profile, it's one to look at, but you could get caught out there with a very highly dilutive rights issue, which would require you to put in more money after the money you put in. So these ones I tend to stay away from.
All right, there's a question on PPC. Willem, how much of a risk appetite do you need to have to go into PPC?
Yeah, a lot. It's an interesting company. It sort of came and gone over the last year, like so many big industrial companies. I was looking at share prices, so sorry for drifting off topic, but like Richemont, yeah. Aspen, they all came and went at a massive pace, and PPC is just another one of those. So I think, again, you know, it's sort of high beta, and the economy, sort of the top-down macroeconomic factors aren't in your favor, so I wouldn't buy any of those industrials right now.
Roy, is it all about the economy with PPC, or are there certain things that you would kind of chop and change within the business?
So PPC, solid company, has been around for 100 years, but you know what? You produce a commodity, you produce something that's very difficult to differentiate, and there's all that production that comes from Vietnam and places like that that comes into the country. Our fixed investment levels haven't grown for the past, God knows, 10 years, give or take. So demand for cement is not growing. So, yeah, I mean, they've fixed up their balance sheet. They've done a lot of things to reorganize the business and de-risk it. But through the cycle, I would need to see strong infrastructure investment in SA, in Rwanda, and Zim for me to be particularly excited, especially if I could get it at a low multiple. So ideally, again, this is another one, zero pricing power, heavily capital intensive, and has just gone through the whole capital risk scenario.
And sticking with you, Roy, I mean, you mentioned Zim, and they're just dealing with a lot of challenges there, although the demand is there, but then there's that hyperinflation that they're dealing with. I mean, would it not make sense for them to actually get rid of it?
It's actually a very profitable business. And the thing about Zim is that, first of all, there's activity within Zim, but then there's also activity in places like Zambia and Malawi, and they don't have particularly big production, so there's a good export market that actually earns dollars for them.
So that's
the complexity around it.
So
I mean, even the Rwanda business does very well, but their primary market is not necessarily Rwanda, it's actually Eastern DRC. So it's a complex business, but at the end of the day, it's a commodity, it deals in a commodity that's hard to price, difficult to move, difficult to differentiate.
All right, there's another question here. How do you rate the prospects for the private education players in this market, Willem?
Yeah, so I think there are two big ones, Curro and Advitech, that come up. I really like Advitech as a stock. I think it's one of the best managed, best run, best sort of placed businesses on the JSE. Unfortunately, it's just like any other equity. It sort of did well and then sort of come around. And then your other option is Curro, which I wouldn't buy now because as it gets spun out of PSG, there'll be an overhang. So that's quite difficult. So in that those two stocks, those are the ones I sort of know well. I think I'd choose Advitech over Curro. And then you just need some legs. You need like quite a long time frame to buy equities now, but definitely an interesting space with real demand and sort of real growth. So yeah, quite good.
Quite interesting, Willem, that you say that you wouldn't be buying Stadio. And I think the last time I spoke to you, Roy, you actually chose Stadio as your stock pick. Have you changed your mind, or are you still there?
Absolutely not. For me, over the long term, what you have here is central government failure and the private sector standing in to provide a service. Stadio has good top-line prospects. They're supplying their services to South Africa, to Southern Africa, and to a variety of others. And the demand for good quality education just doesn't die. It's aspirational. We have a young population. That's the biggest thing that is working in our favor as Africans. So to me, so long as they don't go the capital-intensive way that Curro initially went, there's definitely something there. But yeah, we're in the point in the cycle where you want something that pays dividends, and it's not going to be these. Advitech, on the other hand, does pay dividends. It's nicely mature, doesn't have a CapEx cycle on its way, and can actually increase capacity utilization without necessarily investing in more classrooms and real estate.
All right. Just on that, actually, there's a question here on the PSG unbundling and delisting process. If the unbundling at current prices, taking into account the wide sell-off and price decreases, does that still represent value for PSG shareholders, Willem?
Yes, it does. So I think at the moment it's a two-pronged transaction. So PSG will be spinning out, let's say, something in the order of 80 Rand of assets and then a 23 Rand dividend. So as an individual, I think the dividend is key because there's a 20% withholding tax. But at spot, so I say, I think the sum of those two is about 105. PSG is trading at about 85. So there's a decent sort of margin of safety if you want to buy PSG. Just remember that you end up then with Caro, Stadio, I think it's Co-op Agri and KST, PSG Consult. So, yes, there's definitely value there. It's not a lot, but it's quite a short time horizon. I think it's sort of 2 months from now and maybe 5 or 6%. So definitely still a positive IRR on that deal at the moment.
Let's talk about some other news that came out during the week, and that was Goldfields saying that they will be, they basically reviewed their dividend policy. Now shareholders will get higher returns, and also that they will be they applying to list on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Of course, this is after their deal to buy out Yamana Gold in Canada. Of course, there's been a lot of negative sentiment on this deal because of the premium that Goldfields is paying. But there's still, even with those add-ons, there's still general consensus that it doesn't make the deal better. The deal alone is still not favorable. Roy, any thoughts on this?
This seems to be one that management has really hung their hats on. And their argument is that as a natural resource company, you have to continuously replenish your reserves as you mine. And sometimes exploration, the return to the exploration assets is very low. So maybe this is one big way that we can take a big step up, geographical diversification, get synergies and all of that. So the bottom line here is we've come through a big cycle, big commodity cycle. At the peak of the cycle or thereabouts, management teams tend to buy assets. That's what they do. You can't pay out all the cash because you're working yourself out of a job. So you're going to find assets such as these, which may or may not make sense. Now, they've quantified their synergies, they've decided they're going to pay back a lot of dividends, and they're going to list on that TSX, which should bring some comfort in, from the Yamana shareholders. So, yeah, these things happen at the peak of cycle.
Yeah.
It's the bottom line. So I think management will be hard-pressed to do the synergies that they're talking about and the upside that they believe will come through.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so let's get to your stock picks for tonight. Willem, what will you be picking?
I'm going to pick the Invicta Holdings preference share. I think equities right now are incredibly risky, and I think it's one of the best bank preference shares off with about 20 Rand left on the JSE. So you get a 10% yield, and then there's a potential upside in the fact that they are planning on reducing their debt, which means they could buy out that preference share, which means you get a much shorter maturity than initially sort of stated. So I think it's just an interesting place to sort of almost park your capital until equity markets settle down. So yeah, interesting little play there.
All right, Roy, what will you be hanging your hat on tonight?
Definitely MTN.
Nice.
Just looking at the deal today, looking at MTN, they've got so many things running in their favor. You start with a cheap valuation. They've deleveraged their balance sheets. Their African assets seem to be doing well. I think they're being underpriced because of people's fear about oil and Nigeria and a whole variety of things. And as we go into the reporting cycle, I think we'll prove people wrong with the ability to repatriate money, grow their ex-telco businesses, and pay a dividend eventually. So I think when you look at it short to medium term, this one has multiple sources of value that it can generate for investors.
Indeed, definitely one to watch. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Roy Motooni from APSA Asset Management and Willem Oldewacher from Nitrogen Fund Managers. From Izanati Kuma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.